Chapter 8. Mars, the Noctis Labyrinth. Sclera Vero was the first to see a possibility in Eldon Urquidex. She observed the Magos biologists alight from one of Asubservius's shuttles. He was part of a group of Mechanicus priests and monotask servitors. Draped in the shadows of her stealth suit, Vero watched the arrivals through a telescopic sight. Urquidex was speaking to the priest the assassins had identified as Artisan Trajectory August van Auken. Urquidex was broader than his companion, to the point that he had a bodily presence unusual for the adepts of the Omnissiah. What caught her attention, though, was his manner of conversation. His right arm was up near his face, and his digitools extended and flexed to no visible purpose. Though the rest of his body had the same floating stillness typical of the Martian priests as he kept pace with van Auken, the hand gesture looked a great deal like agitation. When she passed on her observation to Clementina Yendel, the Temple Vanus assassin said,
"A Magos who is upset could be very useful to us. We should cultivate his acquaintance."
So Yendel did. It wasn't difficult. Beneath her disguise of false augmentatia, she moved through the low security zones of Mars easily enough. Urquidex was involved as soon as he arrived with the excavations beneath the Noctis Labyrinth, one of the veils Yendel's team needed to pierce. Yendel spoke to Urquidex for the first time when he put in an appearance outside the labyrinth. She played a hunch. She introduced some flaws into her camouflage, very small ones, visible only in close proximity, just enough so only Urquidex would be able to catch them, but enough for him to realize she was not what she appeared to be. There was a risk. The team could afford her loss, she reasoned.
"Why are you speaking to me?"
Urquidex asked.
"Because I think you would like to speak to me."
There was a pause, the right arm raised again, the digits twitching with indecision.
"You are attempting to suborn me."
"From a path you know to be false," she said. "It is the Fabricator General who is approaching treason."
"I am alone with my doubts."
"But you are being true to the 10th universal law."
"The soul is the conscience of sentience," he recited.
"You are listening to your conscience. The Fabricator General is ready to abandon terror. That is sentience without soul."
One of the priest's telescopic eyes extended to examine Yendel, as if a study of her mask could reveal truths.
"How much do you know?"
"What the Fabricator General intends, not what he can do."
Urquidex's eyes withdrew. There were clicks and electronic chirps, as if the collective of components that his body had become were in debate with each other. He said,
"There is something that should be known."
He incorporated Yendel into his complement of electro-priests and engine-seers when he returned to the Noctis Labyrinth. The complex was an inverted hive city of laboratoria. The experimental centres functioned like the cells of an organism, at times working in isolation, at others linking with many in the service of larger projects. Urquidex's party descended through levels of catwalks and tunnels into a world pulsing with arcane energy and technological ferment. Yendel could not understand the import of most of what she saw. It was too fragmentary. Through doorways, she saw vast machines engaged in dances, complex, massive, and strange. The scale of the endeavours was too huge for any one consciousness to encompass, and she came to a greater understanding of why the worship of the machine god had such a hold on Mars. What was constructed here, what was brought to mechanical life, and what was unleashed were far beyond the human. The spark of the numinous crackled in the giant forges. Though Yendel couldn't guess at the function of each piece of the puzzle that she witnessed, she had a sense of all the cells working in concert. A single project, perhaps the greatest undertaken, united in the laboratoria. The cells were the mind of Mars, and it had but one goal. Hundreds of levels down, at the end of a tunnel that twisted and spiraled and sprouted branches like ganglia, they reached the most gigantic nerve centre. It was bowl-shaped. Concentric circles of workstations and control thrones encircled a 50-metre column of PICT screens. Thousands of adepts were at work, mechadendrites plugging them into thrones, and, Yendel guessed, to each other. The air was filled with a screech of binary cant. Erquidex led his retinue to a post 2/3 of the way down the bowl. He settled into the throne, mechadendrites rising from it to sink into the base of his skull. Before him was a control surface stretching several meters in both directions. There were more ports and mechadendrites here, too, enough for about half of Erquidex's subordinates. The rest turned to devices that Yendl knew were mechanisms of some kind, though so foreign to the ways of flesh, with their clusters of rods and dials and energy discharges, that to her eyes they resembled jointed metal sculpture more than any form of instrumentality.
"Bear witness to the great experiment," Erquidex told her.
She stood beside the throne. There were other attendants up and down the bowl who stood guardian beside their magi, on hand to assist, but not assign particular duties. Yendl adopted that role. She slowed her breathing. She achieved machinic inertness. She watched the screens on the column. They showed feeds from numerous locations. She studied them but could glean nothing from them. They were fragments, glimpses of vast and powerful mechanisms. Other screens showed very little. In the corners of one frame, Yendl recognized the dry docks of the Ring of Iron, but the images were centered on empty space. The remaining screens, easily a third of the total, showed Phobos. The image of the moon repeated at intervals along the height of the column, rendering it clearly visible to every tier. For the best part of an hour, all that happened was a gradual increase in activity. The movements of the adepts became more frequent and faster, as if greater numbers of variables were demanding attention. The chitter and scrape of binary intensified. Yendl didn't move. She did as Erquidex had instructed. She waited to bear witness. The event began. The energy in the laboratorium spiked. The machinery in some of the picked screens began to glow and spit arcs of lightning. The air vibrated with a sub-audible hum. Yendl had the sense of being in a cathedral as a service moved towards its climax. Machinic prayer rose in a stuttering crescendo. Readouts climbed into red. Then the vibration was not just in the air. It was in control surfaces, in the bodies of the adepts, in the floor, in the planet itself. Phobos vanished. The picked screens that looked at nothing flared. The image dissolved into static, returned, broke up, settled into a pulsing, jerking, tenuous existence. Toxins sounded. More gauges redshifted. In the center of the frame, where there had been nothing, now there was Phobos, surrounded by a violet, violent corona. A few seconds later, the ground shook. The earthquake lasted a few seconds. Its magnitude dropped off quickly, until there was just the vibration again. Then that, too, stopped. The priests of Mars ceased all movement. It seemed to Yendl that they slumped with exhaustion, though there was no discernible change in their posture. Erquidex said nothing to her then, nor during the 4 hours that followed, as damage to the planet and machinery was assessed. Yendl remained as she was, processing what she had seen, assessing courses of action. The Mechanicus had teleported Phobos. She deduced that the test had moved the moon from one side of Mars to the other. The game with gravitational forces struck her as reckless. The fact that the Fabricator General had ordered such a step taken implied that the risk was less than the alternative. And the test had been successful, but Phobos was barely more than 22 kilometers in diameter. That was a long way from being Mars itself, and the distance it had traveled was slight. If Kubik intended to remove Mars from the Ork's reach, he would have to be planning a jump hundreds of light-years long, at the very least. Yendl would have liked to take comfort in that thought. She didn't dare. After another 6 hours, Erquidex disengaged himself from the throne. Yendl, with the others in the retinue, followed him back up the sides of the laboratorium bowl. A few rows from the top, Erquidex turned down a row. Van Auken was waiting for him.
"Very satisfactory," the artisan trajectory said. "Your conclusions?"
"There was a 78% survival rate for the sensors placed on the surface of Phobos. The same result for those in subterranean locations."
"That too is satisfactory.
If these proportions hold for Mars itself, the 22% loss will be reflected by over 1 billion deaths. A regrettable but sustainable level of attrition. The Fabricator General's projections allowed for considerably more. I can only speak for my domain, Erquidex began. Van Auken cut him off.
Yet you propose to do otherwise?
The grating electronic voice had no inflection. There was no flesh visible beneath the tall priest's robes. His prosthetics, long and multi-jointed, there was very little about him that resembled the human. Yet his puzzlement was clear.
I hope you are not still intent on questioning the path the Fabricator General has mapped out. You will lead one to conclude you are suffering from apostatical delusions.
Merely a question of means. The arrival of the orcs in the Sol system has created a new urgency, is that not so?
That is correct on a number of fronts. The Imperial Senatorium is demanding the deployment of Titans.
Fabricator General Kubik has refused?
Of course he has. What sense would there be in departing the system while leaving behind major assets? Furthermore, they would be thrown away in the current tactic adopted by Terra.
How has the Fabricator General answered the demands?
By presenting practical obstacles, explaining that the time and the means to transport the great weapons are lacking.
Yendel realized that Erquidex was conducting the conversation for her benefit. She was amassing all the evidence Vangarich would need to prove Kubik's malfeasance. She worried about what courses of action might still be open. Erquidex said, Is that wise? Moving Phobos to a different position on its orbit is far from what will be required. Will we not need more time than we're likely to have at our disposal?
You are indeed mistaken to speculate outside your realm of expertise, Major Biologists, and mistaken again in your assumption. The principles behind the teleportation technology have been confirmed. The grand experiment is a success. The work that remains is a matter of adjusting scale, a simple question of brute force.
I see. Erquidex said nothing else, but did not take his leave. Van Auken's lenses whirred, adjusting focus as he studied Erquidex.
Your hesitation implies a lack of purpose or a state of confusion, he said. You are creating the necessity of a further incident report.
The completion of this project will be regarded as nothing less than treason by the rest of the Imperium.
We act as ever in accordance with the fealty to the Machine God, or are you saying that the preservation of Mars is unimportant?
Of course not.
The Imperium is more than Terra. We have already learned much from the rapid technological development of the Veridi Giganticus. It is a significant probability that the benefits of what may yet be learned will offset losses incurred in the process. Study of the Veridi is more important than their neutralization, especially if they are on the point of cladogenesis.
More adjustment of lenses. Yendel imagined Erquidex seen under extreme magnification. She wondered what psychological cues, imperceptible to the organic eye, Van Auken might be observing on his fellow Magos.
Oh, don't you agree? Van Auken asked.
I do not.
You are challenging the edicts of the Fabricator General?
Yendel was sure she heard surprise in Van Auken's electronic tones. I disagree with their premises and their conclusions, but I will not disobey them.
You are risking much, Magos Biologists.
So is Fabricator General Kubik, Erquidex said. It is the nature of the times. The conversation turned into an exchange of cant. As inhuman as the sounds were, as still as the two priests were, Yendel read an intensification of the conflict. Then Erquidex turned away and started back up the ramp leading out of the bowl. Erquidex said nothing on the journey back out of the labyrinth. They emerged from a gate whose massive sigil-inscribed iron doors parted just long enough to let them through and sealed with a metallic boom behind them. Erquidex chattered in cant to his retinue, and his subordinates scattered on their appointed tasks, leaving Yendel.
Have you understood?
He asked. They kept their voices low, though that meant little in a society where augmetic hearing was the norm. Van Auken had accused Erquidex of taking risks. You have no idea how big they are, Yendel thought. She saw the delineations of heroism in Erquidex's quiet actions.
I understand very well, she said. Does the Fabricator General know how to stop the orcs?
My data on that point is inconclusive.
But if he does, he has no interest in doing so.
Our knowledge base is growing exponentially,
The Veridi are there for an opportunity, not a disaster.
Yendel suppressed a curse. The teleportation project must be halted, she said.
That is impossible unless you have the means of an invasion at your disposal, nor will I raise my hand in disobedience.
Then why show me all this?
So you can take the necessary action.
You just said the project can't be stopped.
It can be slowed.
Yendel nodded. A delay would help. If it were long enough, Kubik might lose his window of opportunity. Circumstances and Vangarich might be able to intervene and force the Mechanicus to fulfill its duties to the Imperium.
The hope was weak and based on shifting ground, but it was Yendel's responsibility to grasp it.
Shifting ground was both the terrain and the goal of the assassin.
If moving Mars is a question of power, she reasoned, then an attack on the Grand Experiment's energy plant might result in a serious setback.
That is so, Erquidex said. I will never cause it harm.
But if you were to be followed without your knowledge to its location...
That would be a singular and unforeseeable event.
We have need of many such events, Magos, Yentl told him. We have had enough of being their victims.